Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Colts fans, I don't know if they're screaming on the mountaintops. In fact, I'm not sure if anybody is screaming on the mountaintops for the news that came down today. By the way, whenever you hear this, Aaron, first of all, when you hear they're going to try to avoid surgery and hopefully rest will take care of it. In my mind, just have the surgery. Like there's no point. Just get it done. Just get it taken care of. I don't want to hear about how this, it's a 4 to 6 week timetable. Just get the stupid injury taken care of. That's always been my thought. If you're going to try to rest it, you're bringing in the possibility of more complications down the line. And when you're talking about athletes, if you could just get the situation resolved and take care of it, do it. And that's what the Colts are doing with Carson Wentz's foot injury. He is going to have surgery. But what's amazing about this, Aaron, if you would take the starting quarterback of any Super Bowl contending team, and we'll just say playoff contending team in the NFL, I think you're going to have quite a discussion on what those teams' chances are. And Aaron Rodgers is the perfect example of how great the Packers feel their chances are of going to a Super Bowl and making a run with Aaron Rodgers, as opposed to if they didn't have Aaron Rodgers on that team. Like it was what we talked about all offseason. What are the Packers like with Rodgers? If he doesn't show up, if he retires, or what is Green Bay? Is Jordan Love ready? And I think you kind of have that conversation with a lot of the good teams around the NFL. But with the Indianapolis Colts, I don't know if the conversation with the Colts has changed with many people on the heels of this Carson Wentz injury. And that, to me, is what is fascinating about Carson Wentz missing anywhere from 5 to 12 weeks, is that your view of the Indianapolis Colts probably doesn't change from the news today. And I just don't think that we see that in the National Football League with playoff contending teams losing their quarterback at the start of the season.
So you don't believe that fundamentally they have any more or less of a chance with Carson Wentz playing, say, 10 games and Jacob Eason playing 5, 6, 7 in his place?
I actually am higher on Carson Wentz than many. Okay. I actually thought that his situation in Indianapolis was going to be better than it was in Philadelphia. I liked the Colts this season. I liked them a lot. I liked them a lot going as far as Super Bowl 56 contender. But I also feel, Aaron, that I was in the minority in thinking about that, because I think that there's a group of people that think that Carson Wentz just doesn't have it anymore. And I think that there's a group of people who are probably celebrating today are saying Carson Wentz is a guy that can't stay healthy.
Yes.
That's the risk that you're going to take. And so it's those two groups,
sure,
that I think look at today as saying, ho-hum, the Colts are the Colts, and they're going to be what they are. I don't think a lot of people thought to me or thought like me that the Colts were going to be a division winner in the AFC South with the addition of Carson Wentz. I did think that, but I just don't think other people think that. And I think from everything that I've gauged on social media and reading about the injury and hearing about the injury, There's not as much panic as there would be, obviously, in Green Bay. Or let's just say Baker Mayfield went down. A hypothetical situation, he goes down in Cleveland, and the jury is still out on Baker Mayfield despite a strong 2020 season. It's just amazing that I don't think that the jury is still out with the Indianapolis Colts, because everybody's mind has just stayed the same, or a majority of the people's mind has stayed the same with the news of the injury today.
Yeah, first of all, I'll say this. I will say I thought the Colts, I don't know if I liked them, didn't like them. I thought they were an interesting story, though, because as you said, this was a playoff team. Obviously, last year you have a starting quarterback that comes in on a one-year deal. He is now retired. But I was fascinated by the Carson Wentz thing, because maybe I am just crazy, but I still go back to that 2017 season where he was playing at an MVP caliber level under the tutelage of Frank Reich. And so I was just fascinated. I didn't know if it was going to work. I didn't know if he was too kind of mentally and physically battered from the Philadelphia years. I didn't know if some of those reports about maybe how he acted acted behind the scenes were true and played a role. But this kind of felt like one of those moments in time where, okay, we are going to get the definitive answer on Carson Wentz. Is he the guy? Is he not the guy? Can he take you to the playoffs? Can he take you to the next level once you get to the playoffs? And so for me, that's the disappointing part of all this, because I thought it was one where we're going to get an answer. This is the guy. This isn't the guy. And unfortunately, it just looks like, you know, if the Colts get out to a hot start without him, it's, well, maybe this guy isn't that good, but we really don't know. But then on the flip side, if they do go 2-3, 2-4, 4-4, whatever it is, because he's out for such, an undetermined amount of time, I don't think we'll get any definitive answers by the end of this season if he is actually the guy that can get an organization, whether it's the Colts or otherwise, to that next level.
Their schedule, Aaron, to start out is brutal. And when you talk about the scenarios, the only break that they get is the first 2 weeks of the season are against non-AFC teams. So if it comes down to a tiebreaker, if you drop those games, you're not losing anything.
But tell the world who they're playing,
though. The conference standings.
But tell the world who they're opening with, though.
No, that's what I mean. Yep. That's why I said that it's a brutal start. They got Seattle in week one, and then you've got the Rams in week two. And that is, you go from that, and then you go into a stretch where after that you've got the Ravens, you've got the Titans, you've got the Dolphins, all teams that you are competing, whether it be in your division with Tennessee or competing maybe for a wild card with the Dolphins in Baltimore. That is what is facing the Colts, and that's what makes this very difficult. By the way, 5 to 12 weeks? You know, can we narrow it down a little? Because we're going to get to week one, and we're going to, is Carson Wentz ready? And we don't know, and that could be the story for the next 7 weeks. Like, that is the scenario in this 5 to 12 week window for it. But that's what makes this so difficult for the Indianapolis Colts, is just because of how difficult that schedule is and the meaningful games that they play early on. Yeah, you maybe get a little bit of a break because they're NFC opponents, but you probably couldn't pick two tougher NFC opponents to face when you open up the season.
Well, and I'd add, if it's that back end of the 12 weeks, you have, ironically, Tennessee, who's obviously the now prohibitive favorite in that division, twice before Halloween. And so that would be right up against that 12-week window where all of a sudden, you know, even if you steady the ship and you start out whatever it would be, 4-4, you know, 5-3, you know, you drop two to Tennessee right there. There might be no coming back from that. So it is interesting, but I would say you're right. I do think the fact that there wasn't this widespread panic. Maybe part of it was this was the projection dating back to Friday, Saturday when this injury happened. But the bottom line was, you're right, it wasn't the reaction. Forget playoff teams. What would the reaction have been if it was, say, Justin Herbert with the Chargers? Or, whatever. I'm just trying to think of teams off the top of my head. Like in terms of the reaction, Joe Burrow with the Bengals, well, there goes the season. Trevor Lawrence with the Jaguars. And so even non-playoff teams, I think the reaction would have been different. And I don't know if it's because people do, in fact, have low expectations of the Colts, which doesn't sound like you and I specifically, yeah, or just the fact that, I hate to say it, and nobody is a winner in a situation like this, but that, as you said, that maybe by this point, people just kind of anticipate Carson Wentz at some point is going to get hurt.
Yeah, that's that's what actually I think was maybe overshadowed in some of this. And maybe it's just in my personal opinion, but I think that the questions about Carson Wentz were, can Frank Reich bring Carson Wentz up to the level that he was playing to in his MVP season when the Eagles ended up going on and winning the Super Bowl prior to suffering that knee injury? That's it. That was the hope. And even, Aaron, if he didn't get to that level, you still thought that he would be better than the quarterback that we saw last season. That new surroundings, familiar coach, a coach that he really likes, that got the most out of him, we would really find out who Carson Wentz is as a quarterback. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, I think we found out who Carson Wentz is as the quarterback. And to me, for a guy who was injury prone or injury plagued, that may be the better way to say it, even dating back to college, I had kind of not forgotten about it, but I didn't think that was the biggest issue. I thought it was his level of play being raised as the biggest issue. But I think the point that you alluded to is that the injury-plagued guy is now who Carson Wentz is.
Agreed.
And you could take Frank Reich and you could put them together and try to do as much as you can, but when you're not available, it's the biggest knock. And maybe that's what this says most of all about who Carson Wentz is, yeah, in the end, the ups and downs, the highs and lows, in reality is, are you available? And Carson Wentz throughout his career has shown that he can't be.
Well, and what I think is not disappointing, but because the injury itself is the disappointment, but, you know, every year, it's around this time we start talking about, okay, there's always one or two teams that is coming off a division win, a division title at the top of the standings, and they take a step back. It happens every single year, all of that. And I know the Titans and Colts both finished at 11-5 top of this division last year, but I really haven't been sold on the Titans this year. I understand they got Julio Jones, but Julio Jones is starting to get up there in age, 32, 33 years old. You know, I've never been a Tannehill guy. And so this was one of those, you know, if you want to call it a hot take or a preseason opinion that you're going to, a flag you're going to plant in the ground. This was one of them. I am not sold on the Titans in this division, but now that Carson Wentz is hurt, now that, and we're going to talk about Deshaun Watson here in the coming segment or two, just what his future is. It doesn't appear as though he's going to be playing at all this year, not because the NFL is suspending him, but the Texans just aren't going to play him. And then, of course, you have a rookie quarterback and a rookie coach in Jacksonville. That's, to me, one of the bummers. Obviously, you want somebody to be healthy, but from a football perspective, I was just interested to see how they duked it out 1-2 atop that division. And now, even though, as we said, you know, I don't think the reaction is stunned disbelief that Carson Wentz is hurt, it does feel like it's going to be hard to topple Tennessee in that division.
Yeah, Tennessee had issues on defense. I think that was the question. We love the glitz and glamour and the excitement of offense, and you add Julio Jones, you're like, oh my goodness, look at all these weapons, but you still got to be able to stop someone. Something that the Colts are pretty good at, top 10 in both yards allowed and points allowed last year on defense. I thought that their defense is one of the better up and coming defenses in the NFL. I was one of the few that believed that Carson Wentz could take them to that next level because he was in the right situation. The problem, again, as we find out today, Carson Wentz is hurt again, and no one seems to necessarily change their opinion on where the Colts may end up because of that injury.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We told you high school sports may never be the same, okay? Maybe a maybe reaching a bit, Aaron, but the point is we've seen something that we haven't seen in high school before because it hasn't been available to high schoolers / college athletes before. Name, image, and likeness rules taking over college sports and now making their way down to the high schools. As Quinn Ewers, the top prospect by many in the 2022 class for high school football, quarterback out of Texas, has decided, and this leaked, Yahoo Sports reported late last week that Ewers was considering enrolling early at Ohio State. No, not in January to be available for spring practice, but this fall, because he wants to capitalize on name, image, and likeness rules that are now in college sports. The state rules in Texas would not allow Ewers to capitalize on those opportunities. So Ewers announced today that he is finishing up his final class that will allow him to graduate from high school, and then he will enroll in Columbus at the Ohio State University and be available for the Buckeyes in fall practice. This is... There are a lot of different levels to this, Aaron, but just the fact of the matter that name, image, and likeness has now reached its nets all the way to high school is a game changer in my mind.
It is absolutely a game changer, and it's interesting because what you mentioned is an important part of this, is that as Texas laws are written right now, Texas is actually, I don't know if it's one of the few, it's one of the few that explicitly prohibits it. Now, there's a lot of states that don't have anything official one way or the other. One, I wonder how long until they officially change that. But two, it is the dawn of a new age. And you know, to be clear, anyone who follows me on social media knows, you know, if you don't, you can follow me on Twitter at @Aaron_Torres. Follow Dan at Dan Byer on Fox. You know, I'm in favor of name, image, likeness, but The idea that it was not going to become pay for play, the idea that it was not going to trickle down into the recruiting game, that was never realistic once we opened this Pandora's box. We now know what an elite high school quarterback is worth on the open market. It's worth noting, one, he is the number one player in the country. Two, he's kind of got a unique style and a unique flair to his game. He's got this long mullet. He plays kind of has a little Johnny Manziel kind of swag to him. So he is a unique example. But, you know, I do kind of, I'll be honest, I do worry a little bit in the grand scheme about where this is going, how it's going to affect the locker room at Ohio State, where this guy's going to show up essentially, you know, being paid to play, and you're going to have a lot of guys in that locker room that have been there all spring, been there all summer, been there training, that are, I think they're probably going to look sideways at him. I'll be perfectly honest. I really do.
Do you think, though, that is a factor of just the timing of this? Because I do in the essence of that name, image, and likeness is so new that a guy like Kyle McCord, who's at Ohio State and is a five-star quarterback in his own right, that is a freshman, maybe doesn't have this opportunity, or C.J. Stroud, who people think is going to be the Buckeye starting quarterback, maybe hasn't had the opportunity to make it in high school, but could in college because of who he is. Like Ewers is making money not because he's going to be a Buckeye, but it's because of who he is in Texas. And at some point, he could be he's the highest rated recruit to go to Ohio State now with a 10 rating, a 10.0 rating, for which is passes what Justin Fields had, what Terrell Pryor had. The point that I'm making, though, is it's not because he's a Buckeye. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's because of who he is as the high school and everything that surrounded him when he was a high school guy. So I don't know how that is going to affect what would happen in his locker room this year.
I get that. And I think it's kind of a fascinating dynamic, because I haven't necessarily bought into the idea that locker rooms are going to be divided because some guys are making crazy money. But I think what makes this unique is that I was thinking about this probably 2 months ago or so. There was this report that came out that Johnny Manziel basically admitted, like, look, when I was in college, yes, I got money for autographs. We all know what happened. I got about $35,000. And so now that's obviously small money compared to what guys are going to be able to get over the table. But I only bring it up because I had this thought when I saw that story. I don't think that's going to divide a locker room, because I think at the time everybody at A&M kind of knew, hey, we're on national TV every week. We're on the CBS Game of the Week. We're being talked about on Fox Sports Radio and all the great national outlets because of that guy that wears number 2. What's different to me about this is I think guys get it. You know, the guys, this kid's got a big brand. This kid's got this. This kid's got that. But I don't know. I don't know, Dan. But what's interesting to me is if he does show up, you know, driving a, you know, $100,000 sports car or whatever, and you haven't been there, and I get it. You're, like you said, it's not because he's the Ohio State quarterback. It's because of everything he accomplished in high school. I think it's different. I just think it's different if you're talking about the first string quarterback, Bryce Young. Even if Bryce Young's the Alabama quarterback, for people who don't know, Nick Saban said he's made close to $1 million. It's different if you're a guy that's been in that locker room, that matters, that the guys know, versus realistically, Quinn Ewers is probably going to be the fourth string quarterback when he walks in that door just because of when he's coming in and all that stuff. I just think it's an interesting dynamic. I totally get your point, and I totally see where I think a lot of people feel the way that you do. I just feel like, man, four-string quarterback, hasn't been here all spring, all summer. The best way I can put it, I know I'm rambling, I'll cut myself that's off all right. here with, no, with this thought, is I guess what I will say is, to me, it's probably no different than being a rookie in the NFL, where he will have to earn that respect of the locker room.
I don't think that this is going to be, you know, Nick Saban was perfect in when he went and told that Texas high school conference on what Bryce Young was making. Mm-hmm. And to say, you know, like, yeah, he was close to seven figures in the name, image, and likeness. Great recruiting tactic. And to your point, just about that, if the Buckeye quarterbacks will be able to capitalize off of being a Buckeye quarterback, whether it be a large amount or maybe a smaller amount, but that's going to happen just like it would be at any other college. What I find interesting about this is now you're putting a lot of the onus on these high school these state high school administrations and these associations to come up with rules that I don't know if they were necessarily fully equipped for their own organizations.
Great call.
So you want to talk about like opening up Pandora's box when it comes to name, image, and likeness. It's a much bigger deal for them and how they're going to deal with it than it is for Quinn Ewers, who honestly, Aaron, is just getting to Columbus 5 months earlier than what he would have been in January.
Sure.
Like, if he was arriving in camp coming in the next couple of weeks, listen, he was going to be a guy that graduated early. He had already set it up where he was able to graduate this summer, so all of his classes aren't in. And it's not like he's skipping the senior year of high school and not getting a diploma and then being allowed to go play college football at a university. No, he's getting his diploma. He's got all of his credits in. He's just going early. And so many of the top guys in college football are also enrolling early in the winter anyway. So to me, it's not as big on that aspect that he's skipping the fall season for his high school, which is maybe a different conversation, not for a different day, but one just solely of guys that you've played with, and now his high school is losing their five-star quarterback to college. It's more of the fact of how these other states in high school are going to be able to come up with things. And if you're a point guard on your high school team averaging 6 points per game and four assists, your state association is now going to have to figure out a rule that, you know, Tony's Pizza, which love Tony's Pizza, whatever, down the street is going to be able to, you know, allow you to get some sort of pay for being the guy. That's the Pandora's box that I think is just going to get completely out of control, is how do these high school state organizations figure this out?
So let me just kind of pull a 360, and I'm just curious for an outside opinion. I'm not saying there's a right one or wrong one. I just want a different one. Where do you just stand in general on guys this young and girls this young making this much money? And I understand it's a capitalistic society. I get all that. I get the idea that a sport that you love, pro golfers, pro tennis players, can go make money as 14, 15, 16-year-olds, all that stuff. What I will say, though, is this. I do find it interesting that we spent all last week talking about mental health, young athletes, putting too much pressure on young athletes at too young of an age. And then we just readily, let him make $1 million. Let him make $2 million. And, you know, a great example, and Dan, we're going to get kind of nerdy Buckeye right here, right now, is there's a kid named Tate Martell who showed up about 4 or 5 years ago with a lot of hype similar to Quinn Ewers. Never worked out. He ended up transferring to Miami. From Miami, he just transferred last week. And I'm not saying you should turn down the money. I'm not saying if you feel like if this person is the right spokesperson for your company, you shouldn't offer him the money. All I'm saying is, what happens if, forget this year, what happens if next year he doesn't earn that starting spot? What happens if he's third on the depth chart coming out of spring ball? What happens if all of a sudden that $1.2 million that he gets this year becomes 25, mentally what it does to him? Does he have to, I'm not saying kids should turn down money, provide for your families. I think it's a great thing. I do just think it's kind of interesting parallel of we spent all this time talking about Simone Biles last week, and now all of a sudden we're just green lighting and thrilled that this kid's going to make one, two, three, whatever it is, $1 million a year.
I think there are going to be pitfalls in any situation.
Sure.
I think that there are going to be great stories. I think that there are going to be stories of hardship and how things didn't work out. We've seen this in guys making the call and jumping from high school to the NBA. And if this is the case, and by the way, I don't think it's going to be the norm for guys like Quinn Ewers to leave at this point. I do think more top prospects will take this route, though.
I do agree.
If they are able to do that. But I think that there are going to be great success stories, and I think that there are going to be some stories that are not so great. And one of the things that I do think is going to happen is, hypothetically, you know, Quinn Ewers doesn't work out. And I'll even use a guy about 15, 16, 17 years ago. Justin Zwick was one of the top Ohio's quarterbacks, or coming from the state of Ohio, that's going to Ohio State. Can't miss prospect, going to be the future quarterback of the Buckeyes, was the guy. Doesn't work out. Troy Smith actually was in that same class, ends up beating him, and Troy Smith's the one that goes on to win the Heisman Trophy. If Justin Zwick would have been able to make $700,000 to $800,000 on his name, image, and likeness, and still wasn't able to capitalize on his Buckeye greatness, it would be kind of like good for Justin Zwick, just like it would be good for Quinn Ewers to be able to, you know what, I at least made money when my name was hot, or when I was allowed to, because now it's not worth anything. Like, think of the regret that you would have, or if you weren't able to capitalize on it. And I also think, in a weird way, I think for some athletes, it's going to be for more motivation. Because if you get a taste of it, and I know there can be pitfalls, but if you see what you can do as a prospect, imagine what you could do if you're a Heisman Trophy candidate. Sure. I don't think it's going to make guys be complacent. I think it's just going to allow them to capitalize on who they are at this point. There are going to be negative stories. You're going to see them written in The Athletic. You're going to see it, in a magazine, the dangers of NIL. And I'm not trying to, brush those aside, but I think that there are enough other positive ways where you can actually look at it and make it work.
Well, and I'll just say really quick is, and this is why I wanted to ask you, I wanted an outside opinion. Obviously, I love college sports. I've thought a lot about this, but I do think there is something to be said. And this is one of the reasons that I've never been necessarily against name, image, likeness, is because of exactly what you just said, is we talk about the career arc of even great athletes. I mean, even the great athletes have an 8, 10, 12 year earning window. So if that 8-year window becomes 12 years, or if that 12 years becomes 15 years because now you're making, a livable salary in college, I first of all, I hope that all these players take advantage of the resources, given to them, that it isn't, just burning a bunch of money when you're 18, 19 years old. And I do think there is something to be said about if it does give a lot of young people a chance to extend that window for 3-4 years, make a little bit of extra money to ease them into their adult life post sports. I think that could be a positive that comes out of this as well.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't look up anything either, and that's why I need Dan Lust in here to help us sort out what is happening in the world of sports. No, I'm just kidding. It's also great to get the band back together. Dan, and Aaron back again. Dan Lust, our sports attorney, also the co-host of the Conduct Detrimental podcast, where there has been no shortage of topics to talk about. But as crazy as it is, I think this is the first time these words have ever been uttered on Fox Sports Radio. Dan, are you ready? Are you ready for this?
I'm ready. I don't know what you're about to tell me.
All right. This is the first time it's ever been uttered. Let's start with the NHL. That has never been uttered on Fox Sports Radio before, but that's what we are going to do. How big are these allegations by Evander Kane's ex-wife or wife or mother of his children about him possibly betting on his own games? How big are these accusations?
So put it this way, right? I'm going to mention a couple names. These are from years ago, but we still talk about them, right? The Chicago Black Duck, the Pete Rose scandal, Tim Donaghy, the Boston College point shaving scandal. Every couple, maybe every couple decades, you get one of these that really questions the fabric of the sport. They're questioning whether or not what you are seeing in front of you is legitimate. The allegations from Evander Kane's, what he refers to as his soon-to-be ex-wife, are essentially that not only did he bet on games, but that he bet on the San Jose Sharks to lose and profited from it. It's probably the worst allegation you could make. It's worse than Pete Rose, right? Pete Rose said, hey, I bet on my team to win. So is there anything wrong with that? So he asked me, is it anything wrong by betting your own team to win? You're probably still going to play just as hard. Maybe that's okay. I don't know. But betting your team to lose and profiting from that, we'll say it's loaded, but we can get into it. Evander Kane's got a long gambling history. It's really messy, but there is a lot of smoke here. It's not just an accusation against any Joe Schmo athlete.
And Dan, that's kind of my, one of my takeaways is that he does have a history of gambling issues, and he's publicly admitted all that stuff. Legally, what can the NHL do in terms of this investigation? Can they get phone records? Can they get email records? I mean, what legally can a place like the NHL actually get from Evander Kane?
So interesting. I mean, they don't have subpoena power, right? They're not like the police department. They're not like a court where they can subpoena people in and have witnesses and whatnot. So they really have to kind of rely on people volunteering. They could get Evander Kane, and Evander Kane is going to say exactly what he said in the statement, that everything is false. Congrats. They get you nowhere. What you need to get to is Anna Kane. Anna Kane is, again, the soon-to-be ex-wife. If you can get her, right, I mean, there might be something here. Now, I guess I'll just point about this, and for those that don't know the full story, and Aaron, you bring it up, there is a lengthy gambling history here, and there's, you asked me what the NHL can do. It's what the NHL failed to do for the last 2 years we as lawyers are kind of pointing at. So, you know, Evander Kane filed for bankruptcy this past year. He filed and admitted to having $1.5 million in gambling losses. So the NHL reportedly has known about that for 2 years. So I'm not sure what investigation they did. I can't imagine that that they figured this all out. But if they knew that there were $1.5 million in gambling losses, and it was supposed to be casino losses, did they go through the receipts and actually add up, like, hey, this came from this casino, this came from poker, this came from blackjack, to get to 1.5? Because if there's any unaccounted for money, you know, in that 1.5, NHL's got a really big problem on their hands. So, yeah, they could bring a lot of people in. But, you know, this investigation kind of begins and ends with Anna Kane. Short of her saying, I made the whole thing up, I don't know how the NHL instills the confidence back that nothing happened here.
One more quick one on this Kane story. Dan Lust joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Sports attorney. Find him on Twitter at SportsLawLust. He's Aaron Torres. I'm Dan Beyer. Was the NHL's response more than reactive instead of proactive because it came so quickly? Is that the point as well that you're making of what they failed to do?
Well, you know, the NHL had this, again, reports are that they knew about the gambling losses for about 2 years. So I don't know. The response was recently, you know, that they're going to launch a full investigation. So I give them credit that on a, you know, on a weekend that they announced they launched a full investigation, you know, but, you know, 8 weeks until the season, you know, they got to figure this out quick. And then we're going to have another, you know, Trevor Bauer or Deshaun Watson situation on our hands. Should the guy be playing with this hanging over his head? And Commissioner Gary Bettman has the authority to suspend him if he commits some type of, you know, conduct that's detrimental to the league. So, you know, we'll see. But the investigation is going to be ongoing, and I don't think it's going to be done in 8 weeks. And I would be very surprised if he's on the ice come the season opener.
So, Dan, one of the other interesting stories, there's a lot of sports law stuff. You're a busy man right now. Is this whole Big 12, SEC, Texas, Oklahoma deal. I think we all, I mean, it's not, I don't think we all know that once 2025 hits, that is when their contract with the Big 12 runs out, there is nothing that Texas and Oklahoma can do. And the Big 12 commissioner has essentially said 2, 3, 4 times on the record, we look forward to having Texas and Oklahoma be part of our conference through the end of 2025. So my question for you is, there seems to be this sentiment in the media that Texas and Oklahoma will be in the SEC as early as next year. Realistically, is that possible from a legal perspective? And what recourse does Texas and Oklahoma have to get out of their contract early?
Is it possible? Yes. Is it expensive? Yes. They can do it. They're going to have to pay a ton of money. But, you know, think about it just normally. This isn't such a fancy legal term. They have a contract in place to bind all of the Big 12 schools to the Big 12 rights deal until 2025. And if one of the schools wants to leave that deal, sure, they can leave it, but they will get sued likely for breach of contract. So, you know, they can pay a lot of money. They can pay, I think the number that the Texas and Oklahoma have to pay for leaving the conference early would be $75 to $100 million per school, not each. Could some of that be footed a little bit by the SEC? Sure, it's certainly possible if they really wanted to get them out early. But Aaron, I mean, we just got to buy Texas and Oklahoma at face value. Their joint statement, which is very odd, it's not a normal thing that two schools issue a joint statement. It says that we plan to honor our contract up until 2025, and then we're going to explore our options. So, kind of tongue-in-cheek, right? Kind of like wink, wink. We're going to hang around until 2025. But, you know, oh, yeah, if the conference does not exist anymore, if there's a complete yep. exodus and everyone goes their separate ways, there's no one to pay the money to, right? Bob Bowlesby, the commissioner of the conference, goes scorched earth trying to save the conference because he knows if the conference doesn't exist, there's no job for him. So that's a little bit of what's going on here. Texas and Oklahoma have basically sent the conference into a tailspin. And I guess just on one high note, people should be paying attention to this. The Big Ten grant of rights deal expires in 2023. So if they're going to renew, and they want to get up to 16 schools. Big Ten's right now at 14. They're going to have to find two new dance partners by 2023. So if they go and poach two more from the Big Ten, or sorry, from the Big 12,
interesting,
all of a sudden the Big 12 is down to about six schools. So I think the world where the Big 12 ceases to exist, I think that is certainly on the table.
Dan Luss, sports attorney, joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Quickly on the Cleveland baseball team, now the Indians, will they be the Guardians next year?
The way I see it, Dan, they have two options. They can write a blank check to a roller derby team, or they can change their name to something that is not the Guardians. Fun exercise for your listeners right now. Go to www.clevelandguardians.com. If a baseball team comes up, I will be shocked. If a roller derby team comes up, you are correct, my friend. A roller derby team owns the website for clevelandguardians.com. Every other baseball team owns their website, sanfranciscogiants.com, detroittigers.com. Now, an even more fun exercise, guys. Punch in guardians.com in. Last I checked, that was an available domain that could be purchased by the highest bidder. I had someone go through the mechanics. The guy on the other end, that like web chat person, was offering it for $50,000. So I'm not sure who thought it was okay to clear the name, but on July 23rd, they announced this name. They did not have clevelandguardians.com. They didn't have Guardians. They didn't have at Cleveland Guardians on the Instagram account, all of which are, besides Guardians.com, owned by a roller derby team. So they can either cut a blank check to the roller derby team, or they can go, which I think is the more popular one, Cleveland Spiders. I'm hearing that all in my replies.
Dan, just a minute left. Deshaun Watson, he's not practicing, but he's there. It does not appear as though anything is imminent from the NFL. Again, 1 minute, just thoughts on where we're at with Deshaun Watson. Is there a logical next step?
No, I think Deshaun Watson is playing a game of chicken right now with the NFL. He showed up, and I think all the experts are saying if he shows up, they're going to expedite the investigation against him and put him on the commissioner's exempt list immediately. And looks like Watson, for now, is winning this game of chicken. He's there. He's in uniform. He's on the sidelines, and no punishment. So, yeah, I think the next step is to have a punishment come, but Goodell seems hesitant to make the first step. So we will see what happens there, but definitely interesting to watch.
He's Dan Luss, sports attorney, co-host of the Conduct Detrimental podcast. Find him on Twitter at SportsLawLust, and you're usually going to hear him when Torres and I get together. Appreciate it,
we're
Dan.
We're here on Friday, Dan, by the way, yeah. me and Byers. So just be ready for the call, okay?
Yeah, no three-day weekends
for
you,
Dan. Throw up the bat signal, guys. I'm here.
All right, thanks, man. We appreciate it. Dan Luss joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.